begin our session for this morning. It's a pleasure to be able to welcome you this morning's briefing session with Dallas City Council. We'll begin with our invocation, and it's a real personal pleasure for me to introduce Pastor Lelius Johnson with St. Paul's Baptist Church. He is a great friend, and I can tell you he's got a terrific congregation that I've had the chance to be with a number of different times. He has a bachelor's degree in arts and pastoral care and biblical studies from Criswell College. He has been with St. Paul's Baptist Church now since August of 1992. He's been actively involved in the community. He's been involved in a number of different efforts, especially in South Dallas and around his church, to really see that community continue to prosper. They have a children's church. They hold various Bible study seminars as well as Bible study for adults there at St. Paul's. He's a lifetime member of the NAACP and serves on the steering committee for the D. Edwin Johnson Baptist Institute located in Dallas. I had a chance to be with them at his kind invitation. He is the proud father of four children. We appreciate you being with us, and thanks so much. Please lead us in the invocation. Please rise.
Shall we pray? Gracious God, our Father, we come again thanking you for this another opportunity to come before your gracious throne. As we come now, Lord, we invite your presence in this place. We pray that what is done here will be done decently and in order, that it will be done to bring a help to our city. We thank you for all those who have given their lives to do this work. And dear Father, we pray that, dear God, what we do would ultimately help humanity. Give glory to your name. For we pray it now in the name of Jesus and for his sake. Amen.
Amen. Mr. Allen, would you lead this pledge?
It would be an honor. Y'all please join me in pledging allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Again, Pastor, we appreciate you being with us. Not only being with us today, but what you do in all parts of our community. I know, having been with you, one of the great things is in your services, you've got a large portion of homeless people that come in and join you for the services as well as the prayer time. And we just appreciate what you do on a number of different fronts. Thank you. We have two special recognitions that we'll have this morning. The first one will be done by Councilmember Cadane. Councilmember Cadane, can I turn it over to you?
Thank you, Mayor, Council members. This is very exciting for me today because I'm going to get to introduce a group that I can even remember, and I shouldn't say that to them, because I'm probably the oldest member on this council. But I want these guys to come up. These are the Nightcaps from way back, and they've been here forever. They're part of Dallas, part of our history. And if I could get all of you guys to come up, Billy Joe Shine, Gene Hoffler, where is Dennis Mills? Dennis? How about Lenny? Then we've got Mark Minton, who is Jack Alday's protege. Come on up, Jack. And then I need to get Mr. Bourne up here. Buddy, you got to come up, buddy. I want you over here on my right side. These guys grew up in... I guess most of you grew up in Dallas, didn't you, Billy Joe?
Yes.
So they've done songs like, I know everybody knows Wine, Wine, Wine. Everybody's heard that?
Yes.
Everybody's heard the Thunderbirds? So these guys have been around a while. They've been mainly, they're our Dallas folks. I've got to read y'all something. I got this will let you know how that these guys operate. And this was in a news blog by Kirk Dooley, but I just got to read you one deal that he put in there. Did you read this, Billy Joe? Is this all true?
Yes.
It's true. 50 years ago, Billy Joe Shine sat in study hall at Jesuit High School in Dallas and scribbled song lyrics that popped into his head. While his classmates were learning Bible stories about turning water into wine, Jesus turned water into wine, Shine came up with a catchy melody and wrote, "You got a nickel, I got a dime, we'll go out and buy some wine, drinking wine, wine, wine." This was in Bible class. So you see how these things come about. And I imagine that's right, so you got to be careful what you say to any of them. They're liable to come up with a tune from it. And I've got to tell you guys, Buddy Bourne, down here on the end, this guy's amazing. He, the other night, I got the privilege to be at their, I guess that was your kind of 50th come out, wasn't it? And Buddy has done three of these in my community at the Lakewood Theater. Every one of them have been sellouts. He also had the Dallas Doo-Wops there, who I grew up with, all every one of those guys, and I knew these guys. I'm not going to tell you who. I guess I better. I think I'm a little bit younger than them, but I knew them. I had sisters that grew up with these fellas. So congratulations to each and every one of you. We love you all, and we're glad you're part of the city of Dallas. And I've got, Mayor, a lot of times you don't read these, but I've got to read this proclamation because it tells all about these guys. Now, I've got to say one thing. These, let's see, we've got, and I don't want to mess up, fellas, we've got right now the current Nightcaps: Billy Joe Shine, Gene Hoffler, Dennis Mills, Lenny Mills, Mark Minton. And Jack Alday was one of the original, one of the original groups. He was the original drummer. That's right. And also, you've got Billy Joe and Gene were original groups. And by the way, I think that Billy Joe saw Gene playing one day. Was it at school? I don't know where it was. Okay. He saw him playing the guitar in school. Says, "I got to have that." So that's what got his music career really started out. So let me read this real quick. His special recognition, whereas Dallas Rhythm and Blues Group founded in 1959, the Nightcaps, a phenomenal performing group for over 50 years with original band members Billy Joe Shine, Gene Hoffler, Jack Alday, Mario DeBow, and David Schwartz. Whereas the Nightcaps recorded their first big hit, Wine, 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 at the WRR's Fair Park studio in 1960. Whereas the Nightcaps have influenced top recording artists Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jimmy Vaughan, and ZZ Top with hit songs Thunderbird. Whereas in April 2002, Texas Monthly Music Edition listed Wine, Wine, Wine as one of the top 100 songs in Texas, and still do, as well-recognized group. Whereas on May 29, 2009, the Nightcaps will be celebrating their 50th anniversary with a performance at the Lakewood Theater with current band members Billy Joe Shine, Gene Hoffler, Dennis Mills, Lenny Mills, and Mark Minton. Now, therefore, I, Tom Leppard, Mayor of the City of Dallas, and on behalf of the City Council, do hereby extend special recognition to the Nightcaps in Dallas, Texas. Thank you guys for all you've done for us. Now, would you like to say a few words, Billy Joe, any one of you? We'd like to hear. Did we do it all? Come up here, Buddy. Maybe you'd like to say something about it. Buddy does this all the time, and I put him on the spot, but he does a great job, and he's great for our community, and he's great for the city of Dallas because he puts these on all over and does an excellent job.
Thank you. Thank you, Chevy. Well, what a great town to be from, the Nightcaps in Dallas. What a great combination, and they've been here for 50 years doing it. And I know they're very, very happy and very proud to be honored like this today. They certainly deserve it. They'll keep playing as long as they can, I suppose, and hope everybody's around enjoying. Best of luck to you. I wish I could give a proclamation to each and every one of you for the hard work you do, because I know it's a difficult time, but I know Dallas has always been able to come through everything. So best of luck to all of you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Judge. We've got one here that's fenced in. Okay. Then I've got these, and I guess we can give one to each member here, if that's okay. And, Mayor, can we get a picture?
I'd love to. You want to add something while we get
I was going to add real quick, you know, if you walk down life's highway and put a smile on somebody's face, that's not a bad thing to do. My father's 83 years old, and as soon as you said that, wine, 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 one of the memories I have of my daddy was where he would say that, you get a nickel, I'll get a dime, we'll go out and buy some wine. And I always had a smile on his face when he did that. And it's funny how as a kid, that brought back that memory of you guys doing that. So that's big time.
Does he have a CD?
I think you'd donate one, wouldn't you? You'd donate one, wouldn't you?
We probably can, yeah.
Yes, Mr. Whitman is right here. And Mayor, I'm going to ask him to come forward. The next special recognition is for the Crime Watch Executive Board. And I will ask the members of the board that are here. I see Doug right here. Come forward. It's a great honor, Mayor, to present this special recognition to a body that has been the backbone of the city of Dallas when it comes to crime. And Chief Kunkel and Chief Simpson are here today, and they will pretty much be with me on this one. Dallas is no longer the city with the highest crime rate, Mayor, when it comes to cities over 1.5 million people. And this could not have happened without the support of the council, management, of course, our police department, and these individuals that work so hard all over the city that are the eyes and the ears of our community and have made the difference. And it has taken us a while, over 5 years, but here we are, Mayor, with the highest crime reduction in the history of the city of Dallas. And I thought that it will be a wonderful day to commend you all and, of course, to recognize you all for the hard work. So let me go to the front and we start. And I think it will be appropriate to ask Chief Kunkel and Chief Roy Simpson to come forward since they're here with us. And thank you all for being here with us today. And the very special reg reads as follows. Whereas the Crime Watch Executive Board, CWEB, is a non-profit organization consisting of Crime Watch volunteers whose primary purpose is to act as a liaison between members of the community and the Dallas Police Department. Whereas the CWEB strives to educate the community and encourage citizen involvement in Crime Watch volunteers in patrol, and other crime prevention programs that help keep neighborhoods and businesses safe. from crime. Whereas CWD hosts the Dallas Police Department annual Crime Watch and Volunteer Recognition Ceremony, where Crime Watch Group of the Year and Volunteer of the Year awards are presented to volunteers. Whereas the CWD has developed numerous publications, flyers, crime prevention resources material, including a Crime Watch toolkit, which received national recognition from U.S. Department of Justice. Whereas the CWD has established a close relationship with various local organizations, including Safer Dallas, Better Dallas, City of Dallas 911, Call and Dispatch Center, Weed and See, and the District Deputy Chief for the Betterment and Safety of our community. Whereas CWD and its volunteers are the eyes and ears of the police department, and due to their efforts have helped in lowering crime in our neighborhoods. Now, therefore, I, Dr. Elba Garcia, on behalf of Mayor Tom Leper and the entire Dallas City Council, do hereby give a special recognition to my favorite group, Crime Watch Executive Board, for their countless volunteer hours dedicated to reducing crime and improving the quality of life of all our citizens. Thank you so much. I know words will never be enough to thank you all for being out there fighting crime with Dallas Police Department and the Dallas City Council. Thank you, and here comes a special recognition. Doc, do you want to say something or anyone?
I hope I don't know I've got my back to somebody. If I wasn't so fat, I could make it. Dr. Garcia, council members, citizens, officers, and especially Chief Kunkel and Chief Simpson, we are extremely grateful for this presentation. It's never happened before. This is the first in the history of CWEB. And actually, it goes to all of the countless volunteers throughout the city who make this city what it is today in their efforts in reducing crime. And it starts at the top, folks. These people are supportive of our efforts. We have an excellent working team together, and that's the only way it will ever be successful is through teamwork and good, solid communication. Thank you from the bottom of my heart, and I speak for Ed Fox, our new chairman, who was unable to be here today. Thank you so much for this, Mayor. We deeply appreciate it, and Dr. Garcia as well.
Thank you. Doug, to you and all of your team, it is always great being with you. You make a terrific partner with everybody involved in the city, and I can tell you that your enthusiasm is contagious, and we just appreciate everything that you do and you and your team. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Mr. Cadane, did you want to add something?
Yes, I did. Doug, thank you very much, all of you and your team. And I'll tell you, our officers and police department do a great job, but without you guys, it would be much, much more difficult. And you just don't realize how important all of you are to our city. And thank the Lord for you and that you're there and will continue to be there. Thank you so much for everything you guys do.
Thank you,
Mayor. You know, I'd love to have a picture too, so just hang on just one sec, okay? Let me just say one thing, because thank you, Doug, and the group from CWEB, Paula, Wilma, my guy here, Ed couldn't make it today. Ed Fox couldn't make it. I think he's out helping form new VIP programs as we speak. So, you know, he's a very dedicated individual in my district, as is Paula. But this group has helped, and I am sure everybody has had the same experience in their district. This group has helped my district so much, forming VIP programs, working with me, working with Councilman Natinsky as well, to help us get our crime rate down in North Dallas. And we are very pleased that we have the lowest crime rate in the city, and it's due to our wonderful police officers. They work hand-in-hand with us, and also our terrific people from CWEB. As a matter of fact, we're working on a little spot for them so that people can have community meetings and so on and so forth at the North Central, where we've been having them before, but we've got a little bit more space now. And so We've been so pleased with what the police department has been helping us with there and what CWEB has been helping us with. You cannot believe how many people I get, citizens in my district, say how much they appreciate y'all. So, and the council members do too. So just kudos to y'all. I'm sorry if Ed couldn't be here as well, but I'm glad that the rest of you can. And I hope you know how much we appreciate you. Thank you so much for your effort.
Well said. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor Leffert. I want to join on the picture also when I finish. I would like to thank Ms. Winnie Dixon, who's my representative, and Carrie Goodwin with the Ferguson Road Initiative. Thank you, Carrie, for all the work that you do. I support the Crime Watch Executive Board. I think you guys have done a wonderful job here in the city of Dallas, so thank you so much.
Good morning. We proceed now to your open microphone speakers. Your first speaker this morning is James Leek Sr., followed by Eva Jones. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant at Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Again, your first speaker is James Leek Sr. Mr. Leek, you do have 2 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both screens. The number will turn to zero in red when your time is up. Please state your name and address for the record.
I'm James Leek Sr. I live at 1958 Yucca Drive, Dallas, Texas, Southeast Dallas. I'm also chairman of the joint called Crime Watch. And I have two things I'd like to talk about today. To Mayor Leffert and the City Council, I would like to bring this to you all's attention if you all are not aware of it. We have a guy that's coming out, looks like every weekend or every other weekend, and he's cooking. I don't think he has a permit. I've called the city, I've called the health department, I've talked to code enforcement people, I've also talked to Mr. Caraway, and I would like for you all to join with Mr. Caraway and do whatever we can do to get this guy stopped. I've told these inspectors I don't think that this guy could be permitted to go to North Dallas and do this. This is a health violation. He's out there cooking, selling it to the public. You know, and I don't understand why this guy is continuing to keep doing this. I understand that he's been given tickets, citations, but it's not stopping him. So whatever we need to do, we need to do whatever we can to get this guy stopped. You know, we don't want anybody hurt. We don't want anybody killed. We don't want anybody getting any infections. And, you know, we don't know if this guy even have a health permit. In fact, I know he doesn't because, in fact, why is he out on the street? So I really would like for the city council to join with Mr. Caraway and do whatever you can to get this guy stopped. And I also have some pictures. If you would like to take them up and let the council people see them. And this is what this guy looks like with his vehicle. He was out just Memorial Day weekend. And we took those pictures 7 weeks ago. And I understand that Senior Corporal Swofford went to the 99 cent store and gave this guy, the manager of the store, some kind of form to fill out, and they asked this guy to leave, and he's not leaving. And you know, we just need to do whatever we can to get this guy removed and stopped before somebody gets sick and somebody die. And we don't need that in this city, and I don't think you all do either. And one other complaint I have is the loud music. My wife and I come from church on Sunday. The next street over, 2007 Alhambra, these guys are playing this stereo and these cars just enormously loud. There is no excuse for that. It goes on 7 days a week. We call the police, they go over there, they write them tickets or whatever.
We appreciate you being with us. The gentleman that you mentioned, first of all, on the barbecue has been cited 8 times. He's paid each one of those. We'll continue to push on that. I'll ask the appropriate folks on the city staff to continue to push that. And that's what we can do. We'll continue to push those and make the citations. And we appreciate you being with us. Ms. Hill and then Ms.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Leakes, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing, Mr.
Mayor? All right. Mr. Leakes, I cannot comment on the specific fact situation that you referred to because I'm not familiar with that. I know you talk to me a lot, but it's not my district, and so you haven't talked to me about this particular thing. If you would like to, I'll be happy to talk with you offline about it. I'll have some facts on that. But, Mr. Leakes, I want to commend you and Ms. Kay for y'all's involvement in the community. Y'all have been involved continuously. Everywhere I go out in the Grove, I see you. You really care about what's going on in that community. And so I want to offer you my commendations and also thank you for taking the time to come down this morning.
Thank you.
We'll also give Ms. Davis and then I'll please.
Thank you, Mayor. Ms. Lee, thank you so much for all your hard work that you do in the Grove also. But I have the same problem. Karen, can you come up to the mic just for a minute, please? And I won't hold you long. I have the same problem off of Hatcher in the shopping center off of 2nd and Hatcher where people come out mostly on Saturdays with a pit. They attach it to the back of their, truck or SUV, and they have a complete setup with mustard, the whole works, the sandwiches, the barbecue sandwiches, the whole nine works. What can we do about this, or can we not do anything about it?
Yes, ma'am. What we do, and it's the same as we do in Mr. Leak's situation, when we're notified that there's a vendor that shows up, we try to pinpoint the time frame that they're out there,
mm-hmm.
and we send inspectors out during those time frames, and it'll be the same as with Mr. Leak's situation. We issue citations, and if it gets to the point that it's continued, if they continue to go in and pay the citation and they're not changing their way of operation, we try to move to the next step, which is we can possibly go out with police and try and confiscate their equipment.
Okay, so that
we have to be notified of where the location is. I mean, the inspectors for those particular areas, they do start seeing some of the vendors, and we do wind up doing sweeps occasionally where they'll go through when they've identified. You see vendors there on a regular basis. They go through and citation them. But you got to remember, most of these are mobile, and they're going to move. We hit them up for a while, and then they move on to another spot. And then when we hit them there, then they'll go back to another. So it's just a constant. We got to catch them where they are at the time. But we do issue them citations.
Now, the one other option that we do have, too, if the landowner, and again, in these, if the owner of the shopping center would agree, then we can go after criminal trespass, too. We can go after criminal trespass. We have to have the agreement of the owner.
Okay, so how do we get the owners? Do we have to have them, they're left to find the owners?
The owner has to sign statement that says that it's all right for the police to enforce criminal trespass on their property. But again, Ms. Reyes is right. If that owner does that, they'll go. It's a constant chasing, and we just have to stay after them until we've made the cost of doing business too expensive for them with that. And that means tickets, and that means criminal trespass, and that means just making too much trouble to do that kind of business.
We appreciate you pushing this. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Your next speaker is Eva Jones. Eva Jones is not present. Mr. Mayor, that concludes your speakers this morning.
Thank you very much. Before we get into the items on the agenda, I'd like to recognize... Okay, we'll recognize her a little bit later then. Ann Margolin, who is the recently elected new council member from District 13, was with us just a moment ago, and I wanted to recognize her for being with us. We'll move now into the agenda. The first item is the approval of minutes of May 20th. Those have been distributed.
So moved.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. Madam Secretary, our appointments to boards and commissions.
Item number two is consideration of appointments to boards and commissions. You have for individual appointment W. Lee Cater, nominated by Councilmember Cadane to the Cultural Affairs Commission. For full council appointment, there is to the Board of Adjustment alternate members John Scott Jackson, nominated by Councilmember Cadane. To the Reinvestment Zone 17 Board, TOD, Jack John Wierzynski, nominated by Medrano to fill the registered voter position. To the Reinvestment Zone 18 Board, Maple Mockingbird, you have Dennis Keith Stone, nominated by Councilmember Medrano to fill the registered voter position.
It's been moved and seconded by Mr. Cadane. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So ordered. That completes the voting agenda. We'll move into briefings, and we've got some items for individual consideration after those. The first is regard to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Periodic Inspection Number 9 report, and that is an update. Mary, do you want to make some initials?
I just want to caution you and remind you as we go into this process, we have some important things that we're going to be asking your approval of next week. I realize it's a pretty quick ask for important approval of some very large items, but we believe, and we've been working night and day on this for the last month, we believe that it is critical to move this project forward given the public safety issues associated with the Corps' concerns about the levees, and believe it's important that we determine whether there is a problem with the levees, and if there is, to get it fixed as promptly and as efficiently as we can. And that is one reason why we've asked you to be responsive to this very quickly. I apologize for that, but I do think that the urgency of these issues needs to be addressed, and we're here to make a presentation to you today and answer any questions we can. Those items will be on your agenda next week.
Ramon?
Good morning, Mayor, members of the City Council. As Ms. Hume has indicated, the purpose for the briefing this morning is to share with you progress made since 2 months ago, since we briefed you on April 1st, relative to the results of the Corps' inspection report. I am going to try to speak and handle a gadget, but I promise not to chew gum at the same time. The city has historically received, as you know, good, very good, or excellent ratings with regards to our inspections of our levee system. However, subsequent to the effects of Hurricane Katrina with regards to the levees in New Orleans, the Corps has implemented much more rigorous standards, new criteria for inspecting levee systems that are part of the National Levee Safety Program, which was enacted in 07. You can see here on this slide the most recent results of our levee inspections, which culminated with our receiving the final report of what's referred to as Periodic Inspection Number 9 back on the 31st of March and the unacceptable rating. The Corps utilized, as we shared with you back on April 1st, a mostly visual inspection and engineering judgment to rate items, and there were a total 206 items that were rated which were found to be, rather, there were a larger number of items that were rated. However, 206 of them were found to be in one of two categories, minimally acceptable or unacceptable, the other category, of course, being acceptable. It is important to note here that not all of the components of the floodway were inspected during this periodic inspection report that was performed back in December of 07. That's an important piece that I need you to remember, because I'm going to come back to that later in the presentation. Nothing's changed with regards to our levees. The levees that are here today are the same levees that were there in 1959. When the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers completed its reconstruction of the levees that had been built previously in the 30s, what has changed are lessons that we've gained. I'm afraid my profession has learned very valuable and expensive and sad lessons from what occurred in Katrina. And so now the Corps has concerns related to seepage that may occur through and under the levees. They also have concerns with regards to the stability of the slopes of the levees themselves. The issue with regards to the height of the levees has always been known, or at least has been known for quite some time. We knew that the levees weren't as high as they should be with regards to handling the design storm, which is the 800-year or SPF storm. You can see on this slide 7 the other categories that were used for purposes of rating the various elements of the levee system. We have, in conjunction with the Corps, identified and categorized all of the unacceptable and minimally unacceptable items, and we've placed them in two separate buckets. The first category is operations and maintenance, and these are things that the city is ultimately responsible for, or solely responsible for. The second one, the second category, are things that require additional analysis, and I might add at this point, significant additional analysis, and you're going to hear me speak to a system study that is required in order to address these issues as I move forward. Now, in the following slides, I'm going to further define, if you will, the operations maintenance responsibilities of the city into three subcategories. The first one are operations maintenance items that we can do and have been doing. In fact, the pictures that you see around this room are elements that we have already repaired. Of those 200-some items that were found to be minimally or unacceptable, we have already repaired 35 of those, and you see before and after pictures around the room of those items that we've been taking care of. So these are things that we have the resources, manpower, we have the funding, we have the equipment necessary to address and are addressing. The second category are things that require a higher level of maintenance than we have been performing in the past. They are not things that we have not been doing, but they are things that will require us to do it on a more frequent basis or to a higher standard than we have been performing in the past. The third category or subcategory of operations maintenance we are referring to as major maintenance items. These are items that will require engineering or engineered solutions and more likely will require construction contracts be awarded to be addressed. This third category, actually the second and third category, are things that the Corps will also be involved in terms of approving our approach. It is important to note that all of these in this operations maintenance category, the Corps is expecting that the city will repair those by April 1, 1 year after we've received that report that we received on March 31st. This is in order for us to remain eligible for the assistance that is available to us through Public Law 8499. It provides for the Corps to assist us both with regards to fighting a flood, should we need it, as well as to assist us with repairs of any catastrophic event that might occur as a result of such a flood. I'm going to give you some examples of the three subcategories, the routine operations items that we've been doing, and here I'm going to explain to you that we have been funding our operations maintenance budget of the Dallas floodway system in our streets department to the tune of $7.3 million. That is what is in our budget this year, and you can see on this slide 11 what are the major components, how we spend that money with regards to maintaining our floodway system. These are some examples, and some of these pictures you see around the room. This is a concrete flume that's been repaired, an area where we had erosion that has been, a concrete flume has been built and sodded, repaired. Area under the bridge that was also experiencing erosion that has been repaired. This one is debris. We clean the floodway. We extract, remove debris from the floodway. This was an area that the Corps called to our attention. You can see on the right-hand side that the bridge has been cleared of that debris. Now then, the second subcategory requires additional staffing and equipment, and some items may require, as I indicated before, Corps approval with regards to our approach. This is our best estimate of that enhanced operations maintenance funding that will be required in order to address what we believe will meet future Corps standard for operations maintenance. I'm going to spend a little time sharing with you, or rather contrasting, the first and the last two items, the first and the last item, rather, that you see on this list. Currently, we mow our floodway system four times a year. The Corps has determined that one of the ways, one of the means by which we can strengthen the stability, improve the stability of the slopes and the levees, is by having Bermuda grass as opposed to Johnson grass growing on those levees. As a result, you might imagine the mowing cycle to maintain Bermuda is going to be significantly more than four times a year. So this is our estimate of what it would take to mow the levees on a much more frequent basis. Likewise, the last item on the list, I showed you a picture earlier of debris against the bridge. The Corps is expecting us to be more timely and to have more debris removal cycles than we currently have. So this is what we believe will achieve the standards, these new standards that the Corps anticipates. The $4.5 million is the annual ongoing operations and maintenance enhancement that we would need. And then on this page, I brought to your attention a couple of additional items that we believe can be addressed as expenditures on a one-time basis. There's a significant number of trees that are going to need to be removed potentially, and there's also the issue related to controlling access. The Corps desires that we be much more proactive with regards to preventing access into the floodway for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is, for example, to keep those fools that occasionally get in there with an all-terrain vehicle that could possibly do damage to the slopes of the levees. It's important to note here that the stormwater utility fee has been the principal funding source in the past with regards to funding these activities. Few examples of what falls into this second category, which requires additional resources, additional funding. Here are culverts, outlets. Quite frankly, there's nothing in this picture that would prevent the levee system from performing. However, if left unattended, they could become problematic. So the Corps is expecting us to do, to be more proactive with regards to addressing these kinds of issues. This next picture I'm going to spend a little bit of time on. This is a trees within 15 feet of the toe of the levee versus trees within 50 feet of the toe of the levee. We have some 2,800 trees that fall between those two categories. 2,800. If we are to comply rigidly or strictly by the Fort Worth District's Corps office, we would need to remove any tree that's within 50 feet. That's the 2,800. This is one area, quite frankly, where we might need to pursue some policy direction, possibly at the national level with the Corps. 50. In other words, the Corps' Fort Worth District standard is no tree within 50 feet of the toe of the levee. Yes, sir. So this is something that may require some additional discussion with the Corps, but if we were to remove all trees within 50 feet, you're talking about removing 2,800 feet. Now, 2,800 trees. Now, it's not a matter of just going out there with a chainsaw. Because what has occurred, of course, is that these trees have established a root system. That root system, in the mind or yes, in the mine of a core, provides the opportunity for seepage, for water to utilize that root system to get underneath. And so it's not just removing the trees, it's also removing the bulk of the root system. Again, additional cycles with regards to debris removal, siltation accumulation. I try to show the grass on that right-hand side picture by contrasting it against some piping so you can get a sense for height. Erosion or channel slope stability on the left-hand side. In this particular picture, there is actually, and I apologize for the quality of the picture, but there's actually one of the steel elements missing in that trash rack that we need to replace. Additional maintenance on the pump stations themselves. Again, debris on the right-hand side picture. Third subcategory, major maintenance items. Again, these are going to require an engineered solution and more than likely a construction contract or some kind of contract to address. In many instances, or at least in some instances, they will require the participation of other agencies that have facilities in or through our levees, and you can see some of those at the bottom of page 25. Again, I want to call your attention, these are gabion walls, and you might think that removing these trees is a simple matter of going in there and cutting them down. Well, those trees have developed a root system that goes down into the slope of that embankment, and so we would need to address that, not just the cutting of the trees. You can see the landslide on the right-hand side, and here I'm showing this one because it's not the simple matter of filling that ravine. It's a matter of identifying what's its source. In this particular case, if I'm not mistaken, this is water that's coming off a bridge above that pier. So we would have to collect that water and somehow bring it down into the river without and prevent this from reoccurring. So again, an engineered solution. Some more examples. This one right here is a stop log closure that is required. It be activated once a flood reaches above the 100-year storm, 100-year flood elevation, between the 100 and the 800, the railroad has eliminated the sill that we had in order to seal that closure. Once again, we will need to engineer a solution, maybe find an alternative way for making this closure to make sure that it is watertight and it functions the way it's supposed to be. This is a concrete, two concrete walls with a construction joint where you see a little bit of separation. That'll require fix as well. Now, moving on to the second category, the second major category that I said requires a system study. I mentioned to you that what has changed is concern with regards to seepage and slope stability. The Corps has determined that a very thorough and comprehensive engineering analysis of the entire levee system has to be undertaken in order to ensure that our levees are able to pass the floods. These studies will analyze what is the potential. They will test for seepage through and under the levees. They will look at the effects that the pier penetrations have into our levees. They will study the issues related to the stability of the slopes, and they will identify, or the study will identify, any necessary remediation in order to address both the 100 and the 800-year flood. We will also, as part of this system study, identify funding source or sources. It could be the city or a combination of the city and the Corps with regards to addressing the issues mentioned above. More specifically, the study is going to encompass a very significant geotechnical analysis of the entire 23-mile floodway system. It will require some additional hydraulic modeling. It will develop, as I indicated before, what we refer to as a levee remediation plan. Whatever deficiencies are found, we will then move into identifying alternative solutions and identifying the proper approach to remediate those deficiencies that we find. It will include a cost-benefit analysis of those alternative solutions as well as an environmental impact analysis. The Corps has determined that they can assist in identifying and in potentially implementing these needed improvements. And here are the two reasons why the Corps has reached that determination. First and foremost, they did reconstruct these levees in the decade of the 50s, and they also recognize that there have been changed conditions due to the urbanization of the basin upstream. So the Corps can assist with this system study. Now I'm going to talk to you a little bit. If you recall, we talked about FEMA last time, and I'm going to digress a little bit and come back to FEMA because this is important. It's important to understand that the Corps' standard for design and FEMA's standard are different. The Corps designs to a much higher standard, a much greater storm. They want our levees to pass what they refer to as the standard project flood. We sometimes call it the SPF, and that's about an 800-year event. FEMA, on the other hand, utilizes what they refer to, or what we call in the industry, the 100-year flood. This is a flood that has a 1% chance of occurring on any given year. As a result of the inspection report that the Corps produced, they have rescinded their certification of the levee to FEMA. FEMA has therefore begun what they call their de-accreditation process. They've begun that in April. What does that mean? It means that FEMA intends to proceed with remapping the floodplain for that area as if the levees were not there. Now then, our challenge is to prove, if we can, that the levees are able to perform and pass the 100-year flood, or, in the alternative, to fix the levees to ensure that they can meet that standard. So once again, the system study, one of the early components of this system study, will be to ascertain, are the levees capable of protecting those properties during the 100-year flood, and if they're not, what do we need to do that? It is our intention to do this prior to, or to complete that element of the system study by February of next year. Should the analysis demonstrate that the levees are capable to perform, result that the levees are capable of performing, we will ask FEMA to keep the current mapping. Should they not, we will then proceed to analyze what are the solutions and what are the construction projects that we must implement, and then we would begin a comprehensive public information campaign to advise everybody that is affected by this potential floodplain change and encourage them to buy flood insurance. There is an advantage to buying flood insurance now while the map shows them to be protected prior to the remapping process. City's goal is to complete construction repairs of any deficiencies that we might find by January of 2011 so that once again we might be able to affect FEMA from issuing new floodplain maps. Let me talk to you a little bit about the system study. This is the ticket. We're referring to it as the path forward. It has taken probably at least 2 weeks full time, early morning to late at night. Ms. Jordan sequestered individuals high level from all of these agencies to agree on a scope and a schedule, a very aggressive schedule, nevertheless doable, we believe doable, in order to accomplish the analysis that needs to be done in a shortened time frame. Now, everything is relative. When I say shortened time frame, it means 3 years. It is important to note that were we not to have developed this aggressive schedule, this study might take anywhere from 5 to 10 years. It is also important to remember that in order to achieve this aggressive schedule, all of these agencies will need to be worked very cooperatively and diligently to meet all of the individual deadlines. The Trinity River Corridor Project has been, always, and will be a flood control project. And there are several items, several elements of the Trinity River Project that address some of the major findings, some of the major deficiencies in the inspection report number 9. Specifically, the levee height, which we've known for over 20 years that we did not have sufficient height to pass the SPF or the 800-year storm event, and the issues related to slope stability. We've always recognized that the 3-to-1 side slopes that we have on the levees are probably not optimum and that we ought to consider something like 4-to-1 slopes. The corridor project allows us to move forward cooperatively with these federal partners that I identified earlier on. And as a result of our Trinity Corridor project, we are in a unique position to immediately begin to cross-share in the system study with the Corps. What I mean by this is that there are very few, if any, other communities in the country that find themselves in a position where having had our levees found to be unacceptable, coincidentally, we were in the process of strengthening and heightening those levees with the Corps. And so most other communities, it's going to take them much longer to address these same issues that we are facing. We will need a cost-sharing agreement with the Corps in order to proceed with a system study, and we anticipate bringing that back to you this fall. However, because the North Texas Council of Governments has a current agreement with the Corps for the Upper Trinity, we can use it. We can supplement that contract to jumpstart this effort and get the Corps working as we speak. We can advance fund many of the tasks that the Corps would have to undertake in order to expedite the system study, and we are suggesting, we will be recommending to you that you consider amending existing contracts that we have in order to undertake those tasks. They include, as you see on this page, the floodplain management contract that we have with the firm of HNTB, the Trinity Lakes design contract with CH2M Hill, as well as our contract with the Parkway with the North Texas Tollway Authority. Howard Needles Tammen Bergendorf. Seldom does anybody pronounce those names. Don't ask me who CH2M Hill is. I don't know. But we are proposing that we supplement that HNTB contract by a significant amount in order to undertake many, many of the tasks. And I'm going to give you more detail on this. We've developed a scope, and we've negotiated a fee. There are certain fees that are set because we know precisely what those elements of work will be. There are others that are not. There are special services that will require our prior authorization to proceed. So what I'm telling you is there's still a lot of unknowns, and we won't know the answers to those things until we've undertaken some of this analysis. We're optimistic that we won't have to spend all of this money and that only work that is necessary will be authorized. A little more detail with regards to a breakout of what is included in that $25.5 million is included in your page 41. You can see that the lion's share has to do with doing a very, very thorough analysis of the geotechnical, the soils in and around the levees. That will cost in excess of $14 million. Basically, what we're doing is drilling holes, taking core samples of the soil up and down the entire stretch of the floodway. There'll be a line that runs down the middle of each of the levees, and then there'll be a line along the toe, both the inside toe and the outside toe. There are monies identified to help us engineer the solutions to those operations maintenance issues that we told you we would have to undertake. There are monies to help us develop what's referred to as the maintenance deficiency correction plan. This is a plan that we have to submit to the Corps and that we have to implement within a year's time. There are There are monies for reimbursable expenses. There are monies for a complete mock inspection of the system. If you'll recall, early on in my presentation, I told you that not every element of the floodway system has been inspected. Well, we intend to inspect it ourselves. We want to make sure that if there are any other warts, if there are any other deficiencies, we identify those and we address them expeditiously so that we're prepared for the next inspection. Last but not least, you see that there are monies there for to obtain our reaccreditation of the levees with FEMA. It's important to note here that we anticipate that about half of these costs will apply toward the city's cost when we move forward with the Dallas Floodway Project with the Corps. So we'll get credit for about half of this amount because in those projects, the city has to participate. So we'll get credit for that, about half of that, when we proceed with those projects. A little bit with regards to HNTB, they are currently involved with providing and have been for many years floodplain program management. I apologize, not have been for many years. Since the 06 bond program, they've been providing us with floodplain program management services. They are coincidentally also the corridor manager for the North Texas Turnpike Authority and have in effect already been overseeing the geotechnical work that is almost complete for the parkway. They are a well-known, respected engineering firm on a global basis, and they have a number of individuals, retired Corps employees, some of whom were in very high levels approving the very same kind of work that we are proposing to bring to the Corps for their approval. We're also proposing, as I indicated, a supplement to the lakes design contract that CH2M Hill is performing currently. It will require some additional hydraulic modeling as well as environmental and archaeological testing. We are proposing the supplemental agreement to the contract with the existing cost-sharing agreement that exists between the COG and the Corps so we can get the Corps started quickly in their portions, their tasks that they need to do related to the system study. And those are identified on the bottom of page 4. The Corps will be doing the environmental impact analysis. They'll do the research related to the deeds, compile property values, and perform what's called an unsteady flow hydraulic model. City is proposing to enter into a supplemental agreement with NTTA. And here the principal reason for this is that the Federal Highway Administration has determined that a limited scope supplement to the supplemental draft environmental impact statement needs to occur. I didn't make that up. That's the term. Therefore, the city will need to enter into the supplemental agreement with NTTA to address that part for the parkway. We will need to enter into a cost-sharing agreement with the Corps that will cover all of the costs associated with the system study. We don't know how much the elements that the Corps is going to be undertaking are going to cost. That's why we don't know what the total cost for the study is at this time. We will be bringing that back to you later this fall. Remember that the most significant portions of work associated with a system study are actually going to be taken by those supplemental agreements that I've identified for you. The city is going to do the bulk of the work through those contractors. It is our goal to complete the system study, as I indicated before, in 3 years. It is also important to note that as the system study progresses and analysis is performed, that we will be able to have concurrent activities once we define, number one, what are the issues, do we have any, and what are the fixes. It is anticipated that the construction of the floodway project will be delayed some 10 months, and that the construction of the parkway itself, the roadway project, will be delayed some 20 months. It is also important to assume that, as I said before, that the levee improvements in the parkway will be concurrent once we get answers to some of the issues. We will be asking you at your next council meeting to approve the action items that you see on page 48. A supplemental agreement with a firm of HNTB, one with the firm of CH2M Hill, one with the North Texas Tollway Authority. as well as one with the North Texas Council of Governments. I am going to then ask you, if you would please, to turn to page 51 of the appendix. I am sure that the question in your mind might be, how do we pay for this? We are fortunate in that our voters have allowed us to make significant investments in our drainage systems. Both the 98 and the 06 bond program included significant monies in drainage improvement propositions totaling almost $600 million for initiatives associated with the Dallas floodway. First and foremost, the 98 had the $246 million for the Trinity project itself. The 06 had almost, I believe, $334 million. A significant amount of that was earmarked for the pump stations, three of the pump stations. It is, in our opinion, appropriate to utilize some of the funding to address the work that we're asking you to proceed with in those contracts at your June 10th meeting. We are therefore asking that we defer a project funded through the 06 bond program. Here I'm going to digress just a moment. What you see here is the Dallas floodway with the L port coming in on the far left-hand side, downtown Dallas, and you can see the entire length of the floodway. You can see the floodplain. This map represents about the same area on a slightly larger scale, and I have shown here in green and yellow the areas that are flooded as a result of in what we refer to as interior drainage. There are a total of six pump stations that allow us to capture that water, pump it into the levees when the river is up. All of those pump station systems, need to be enhanced. The 06 bond program included monies to address three of those: Baker, Abajo, and Abel. This is Abajo, this is Baker, this is Abel. Two of those projects are a little bit ahead of schedule. Actually, all three of them are on schedule, but two of them are a little bit closer to being complete in terms of engineering design. Palaho and Baker are approaching design completion. We anticipate awarding construction contracts for those two pump stations the latter part of this calendar year. Abel's schedule is a little bit further behind, so we're proposing to design and purchase the right-of-way necessary in order to implement ABLE, but not award the construction contract. Utilize those funds to pay for these studies, for this analysis, and then award a construction contract for ABLE next bond program. So that's the funding strategy for how we pay for these things. Okay, we would proceed with the improvements to Baker, Palaho, delays Abel. We would have it designed, we would buy the right-of-way because we're going to relocate where that pump station is currently found. We would have it ready to go to construction so that the next bond program, hopefully, we can have the construction funding for it. And with that, Mayor, I'll conclude my remarks.
Ramon, very good presentation, and let me just clarify and say that what you're asking the council to do is to simply allow the realignment of a new prioritized need, I'm going to say it that way, and we're going to just simply delay one end and push up another end that is most important to us and right now today.
Yes, sir.
Okay,
that's absolutely right.
All right, and no change, even though we are shifting, we will get all projects done, but according to the needs that we have currently today, this is the best way to proceed at this time, is what you're asking us to do on the 10th.
In our opinion, sir, yes, sir, it is.
All right, thank you very much.
Well, Ms. Helfrich is in the state.
Thank you so much, Mayor. Ms. Vegas, thank you so much for your presentation. If you will help me with questions that I don't understand, please. On slide 17, please. The $8.45 million in fiscal year 10, is it anticipated that that money will come out of the stormwater funding?
Ms. Hill, that decision hasn't been finalized. What I set for you is the understanding that the current 7.3 that is spent on levee maintenance is funded through the stormwater utility.
Okay. If it were not coming from stormwater utility, what would be the source, the potential source for that $8.45 million?
Taxes.
General fund money?
General fund.
Okay. On slide 20, and actually this is a general question, how is the root system removed and how much does it cost?
We have done some research with other agencies who have taken on similar approaches and ascertain a means, a methodology, and an estimated cost based on an average size root ball, if you will. But it requires, obviously, significant excavation and then placing back that material, good material, compacted to the standard necessary.
Do you have any idea of an approximate cost?
Yes, sir. The cost is that $4 million divided by 2,800. That's the per unit average cost. Excuse me, $3 million. I apologize. $3 million divided by 2,800. Yes, ma'am.
On slide 30, when was the last geotechnical analysis performed?
There have been geotechnical analysis performed throughout the years, Ms. Hill, with regards to any improvements, any bridge, any penetration that's been done through the levee. But as it relates to the overall floodway system and the construction of the levees, the last thorough geotechnical analysis would have been performed back in the 50s prior to the reconstruction of the levees.
So even without the Corps' latest analysis, would it not be time to do this again?
I think, Ms. Hill, I don't mean to be difficult in responding to your question, but I think we have learned lessons as a result of the failures in Katrina that have caused us to go back and redo things with the knowledge that we now have.
Thank you. I understand that, and I don't think you're being difficult. I think you're being a very specific and careful engineer, which is what you are.
Thank you.
On slide 37, you said that the Corps can assist us with resources. Now, the Corps gets its money 1 year at a time.
A trickle at a time.
Yes. So, does the Corps have money now to assist us?
The short answer, Ms. Hill, is they have a little bit. But the reality is that the reason why we're proposing that we front in so much of this effort is because if we wait for Congress to appropriate funding at a level as they have been appropriated in the past, we could be here forever.
I'll tell you an example that we've done this in the past. When we had the flooding in Rochester, and city facilities and people's homes were flooded, we built a levee. We front-ended the money to build the levee, and it was reimbursed to us. But we just believed, and it's a similar situation to this, that as local government, we're responsible to our citizens, and we need to get the work done, and we did get that money back. So it, over time, but there is a precedent for doing this.
Ms. Film, did you may have answered the question because you said over time. did we get the money back substantially in lump sum, or did we get it year after year after year?
We got it in a lump sum, but it was 4 or 5 years after we did it. But that flooding was so disastrous that we felt that we recommended to the council at that time that we've got to build this levee now, and we did, and the Corps reimbursed us. It was 4 or 5 years later. I know. There's a different situation now. I just give that example to tell you that sometimes we make decisions for our citizens and work toward accomplishing that reimbursement, and we were successful last time.
And there is precedent that Congress will reimburse.
Oh, yes. And we talk, you know, the people that we work with in the Capitol, in D.C., understand what we're doing, and we'll be supportive of that.
Okay. On slide 52, what will be the effect, Mr. Negus, of delaying ABLE?
I've attempted to show, and I realize that from where you sit in this hill, you cannot see it with details, but I've attempted to show you the potential maximum flooded area as a result of the sump area that we call ABLE. Okay? The effect is that you extend the period of time that you would provide additional protection from flooding for that area until such time as we construct those improvements.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mendez. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm on page 12. Ramon, the picture to the left, my left, is that the hole? That's one of the things that we had to redo over with the crack.
You may not be able to see it that distinctly, but basically this is an old concrete flume that we had to allow the drainage to run down this path adjacent to a bridge. Over time, you've had failures.
Okay.
And you actually have, as you stated, Ms. Davis, you have holes, and we have re-poured a new flume, concrete flume.
Okay, and I guess I'm just being just a little nitpicking here. It's no big deal. Behind the fence, is that trash from the rain when the water's at a certain level? Is that trash?
That's debris.
Okay, how do we deal with that long term?
In one of the slides, if I can ask you to go to the slide that shows the enhanced maintenance, we do debris removal right now. The Corps is expecting us to do it on a more frequent basis. But we actually have crews that go out there and pick this stuff up. But one of the things that we anticipate that we're going to have to fund at a higher level, Ms. Davis, is debris removal.
That's the debris removal, but any of you that are interested in this, go out during a big rainstorm to these pump stations and look at the trash racks. And the stuff that anybody throws out and throws on the street is washed down ultimately to that, and we are all paying to have it picked up and cleaned out. And it is a holy mess.
I believe that. So this is we have to find funding, Mary, for something similar to this, what we're seeing.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Okay. Now, on page 15. The bridge, and when I did a tour with Jill and her staff, I saw this bridge. How old is this bridge, Ramon? It's live.
I think this is one of the oldest bridges that cross the Trinity, Ms. Davis.
Oh, but it's, but...
I don't know that off the top of my head, but I can find out for you.
Okay. Looking at this bridge, is it safe, Mary? Is it safe?
Yes, but we are going to be looking at this bridge as part of the project to remove. This is the one we're removing some of the supports, and this will become a trail for bikes and walking. But those supports catch debris during a flood event, and so those will need to be removed eventually. But what the Corps is telling us is you need to be taking that out on an ongoing basis until you remove those supports.
Would this be a part of any of the funding that you're requesting?
Well, actually, this is part of the Trinity Project, that removal of the floodway project. So it's funded elsewhere, but it will be part of the study.
Okay, so this is coming out of some different pot of money.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Ramon, page 18. Now, did we have to, on page 19, Are we looking at two of these, or it was just one to the right that we had to take care of?
Actually, these are different pictures, Ms. Davis, and in all cases, there's work that's necessary in order to strengthen and protect the wing walls around and adjacent to these covert outlets.
Okay, but this is just an example.
Just an example, yes, ma'am.
Okay, this is to show us. Oh. Now, on page 34, and you talk about a meeting with the neighborhood businesses and development community that will begin in spring of 2010. Once again, what would that meeting be consist of? About flooding insurance, or about what you have shown us?
If you don't mind, let me explain the process.
Mm-hmm.
We are optimistic that within a year's time, we will know, actually in less than a year's time, we will know whether the levees are capable of passing the 100-year flood.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Whether some remediation is necessary that we can complete within the next 2 years in order to retain, or regain rather, our levee accreditation, and in order for FEMA to keep using the same maps they have now that show the areas behind the levees as being protected. If within a year's time we discover the levees are incapable of passing the 100, and it's going to take us longer than 2 years to address it, we want to make sure that those people that live behind those levees take advantage of the fact that if they buy flood insurance now, before the remapping, it'll be less expensive than if they wait till later.
Well, which community? We're talking Joppy? Which?
Davis, I apologize because from where you sit, you can't see the detail, but I certainly welcome you to approach it. It's everything that you see in this sort of light green,
mm-hmm.
all of that is the floodplain if you eliminate the levees. So all of that area would be subject to flooding as a result, would be shown on the maps as being in the floodplain. If you buy the insurance prior to the remapping, you'll get a reduced
point. And you can get with me later. The neighborhoods, will this be like down? You might not want to mention these neighborhoods right now.
It would be the bottom and Rochester.
Okay. Okay, so it would be the bottom. I thought so. Rochester, because it has flooded in the past.
Behind the
mm-hmm. So they would have to purchase
If they have a federally backed mortgage, their lender would require them to buy flood insurance.
But we don't know that yet. We don't know that yet. Okay. And the other thing, Jerry, can you just come up and give a little about CH2MHILL?
Yeah, these names. CH2M Hill is our lakes design firm. They are the ones that have been working on the recreation improvements kind of in the floodway area. Also down in your district, they've also been working on the MLK Gateway area. So they've been working for us for about the last...
it's just another private engineering developer.
Okay then. And my last question, man, I'll be finished. So we have those neighborhood meetings, then one of those meetings would be to talk about the flood insurance in those areas, particularly Rochester and the bottom.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And my last one
I want to see, those meetings will be held if indeed there's a problem.
Correct.
If we can get to the point of certification, then it'd be a moot point.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And on page 48, Ramon, on June the 10th, then this is what you're asking of us to approve on our June 10th council meeting.
Those are the action items that will be placed on your agenda for your consideration, Ms. Davis.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Mr. Zansky, please.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. Ramon, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Ramon, this is a very good presentation. When I read it, something that should be our number one priority in the city of Dallas. Our flood control should be the number one priority, nothing else. Page 35. I've done a little investigating, and, you know, always with the wording that I'm going to say, in all due respect. There are several things here. The insurance, NFIP, National Flood Insurance Program, that is funded by the federal government, it's managed by FEMA.
Yes, sir.
It's actually a federally funded program. And I think, but I don't want to hold and say that, I think you can buy insurance up to $500,000 on the property, and on contents, $100,000. I'm not 100% sure if those are the figures and the people who I have checked with.
And I think you have those numbers correct, sir.
Okay, and that is priced. I only ask for businesses when I ask, and thank you for the correction, because I'm going to get into that too, but thank you for the correction, but I should have specified that what I'm quoting is only for businesses.
Yes, sir.
Because I'm concerned about the insurance, and I should be concerned about the residential properties, and thank you so much for correcting me, or adding that to it. As we say here, an addendum to it. And of course, all of you know that is priced on where you are on the new flood maps. That pricing is going to be where you are on the flood maps. I have a suggestion. I won't be here. I hope I'm here, but I won't be here at City Hall when this is done. I think it would be great for the city to do a superimposed on when you get your grades back, you know, 546, 544, superimposed on there where you have property and how much DCAD insurance they are paying at that time. I think it's going to be very helpful to the city council to see in this pocket area we have $1.5 million on DCAD on this property, this 16 acres. There is no value to DCAD. I do want to correct one thing. The property insurance that you buy today would only be good for 1 year.
That's correct.
So I want to make that very clear. It's only going to be good for 1 year, because I don't want anybody to leave here thinking you can buy insurance for 3 or 5 years. It can't be done.
You are correct, Mr. Rosensky, but what's important here, should the maps be changed, is that you lock in the area that you're currently found in the map. And so you're right. It's a one-year policy, as in most cases. But you lock into that area as it is designated today, and that's what affords our citizens potentially savings in the future should the area be remapped.
In all due respect,
right.
In all due respect, Ramon, I don't know if I can buy that. I don't know if a new floodplain comes out that you can lock in your old thing. I don't know that. I hope you're right. I would like for one of them to come
right.
up.
You all might want to come on up, but yesterday when we saw the newspaper article...
Come on up.
We
won't holler at you too much. Come on. Okay.
Yeah, the newspaper article was a little unclear as to how the insurance worked, and FEMA was kind enough to share with me kind of the... And Cindy over here from FEMA helped explain it best.
And Jill, who I called, and young lady with FEMA, who I called, is someone who writes insurance in Cadillac Heights for the businesses in that area. I wanted to talk to somebody, but I'm glad you're here. I have a question. I don't understand if the de-accreditation happens and you have a property in a 546 grade. Let's just hypothetically say it's a 546. And you buy insurance on a 546 grade, and it comes back that grade now really isn't 546, but the flood, it's going to be a 3-foot differential. And are you telling me an insurance will lock that old grade in because you put a policy on it?
Okay.
And if you're saying that, I'd love to get an opinion from y'all, written opinion.
Let me give you a scenario that will help clarify for everyone. What happens is the initial flood insurance firm map for Dallas is 1984.
Okay.
If you had built
So what we have is pre-firm, post-firm. Pre-firm is before your map came out. If you constructed your property in 1983 prior to the floodplain, you were considered pre-firm. If at 1984...
Pre-existing.
Right, pre-existing, pre-firm. And then post-firm, which is if you constructed after 1984, there are options to buy in flood insurance and locking in the standard X rate.
Okay.
And here's how it reads. We wrote it down as you know, to try and make it as clear, and because government jargon can be very complicated. So we wrote these scenarios down to help citizens understand. The city, if they're unable to provide the certification, which at this point we're not sure, you know, it'll be a mute case, as he said, if, you know, if you meet the deadlines. If you have a post-firm structure, which is after 1984, and you're built in an X zone, because right now everyone behind the levee is in an X zone. If the levees are not certified, then they would be in an A zone. But if they buy now, they would save money and they would purchase in an X zone. So they would have a preferred risk. Now, it renews annually, just like your homeowners.
Or any insurance. That's right.
So you're not denied it, but you keep that standard X rate. Unless, and for the entire time of the loan, or the entire time of the coverage, every year you renew. Now, you keep that standard X savings until you incur one or two losses that exceed $1,000.
Okay.
That's the only time you are going to lose that discount.
Well, that pretty well answers it, and I love you, and I appreciate you coming down here, but I'm always skeptical of dealing with the government and dealing with insurance companies. So I'm glad you said several losses, over $1,000, they can take you out of that present floodplain. I'm just trying to bring that out, that we don't know if that earlier existence, that pre-existing condition exists when you buy additional insurance when it's recertified.
Now, you wouldn't want the coverage to lapse. You want to keep continuous coverage.
I understand. Number two, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Number two, Ramon, and I didn't have time to ask. You made a statement here, and maybe the young lady from FEMA, of course, we don't know this. I have not read a deed of trust on an FHA mortgage that has already been written. So you say in here, loans will be required to obtain flood insurance. I don't know that. I checked very quickly with one of our attorneys. Very quickly. He did not study it. He did not look at it. He said, to the best of his memory, and he said, do not take this with any action intended. He did not think they could, that if you held an FHA mortgage and the deed of trust would stand in its place, that you would not be required to obtain flood insurance. I have not read a deed of trust on an FHA loan because we never made FHA loans.
There is a, in 1994, Congress passed a law, it was a mandatory purchase loan. That if you have a loan federally backed by the government, Freddie Mae, Freddie Mac, that is backed with federal dollars, that in order to ensure that homeowners don't put themselves in risk, or that lenders are protected, you know, when they loan out money and someone gets flooded and they don't have flood coverage to cover restoring their home, that, you know, of course it puts the lender in a bad position. What we did was, not we, Congress, passed a law in 1994 that if you have a loan federally backed, it is a mandatory purchase. It must be insured by flood insurance for the life of the loan.
94 forward or prior to 94?
In 1994 it was mandated.
It was mandated in
94. That all future loans federally
backed
by government.
94? What about prior to 94?
That is when we determined, or the federal government determined, that there were huge losses and that they needed to enact some laws. So in 1994 and forward, there was a mandatory purchase.
Okay.
And for lenders who do not comply with those laws, then there are penalties for them.
I understand that, and I can understand that. But
yes,
if you obtained a loan and a deed of trust prior to 94, you know, that's only 15, that's, you know, if you did that, I don't know if you would be required to obtain flood insurance prior to 94.
Some lenders have what they call a mortgage portfolio, and what they do is they monitor. We're not going to go back and we're not going to tell a homeowner you have to. It's what you're talking about is a relationship between the lender and the homeowner, and nothing to do with
that's correct
with FEMA.
But there is a thing. Property owners who hold federally backed mortgages loans will be required to obtain flood insurance.
Right. The lender has,
and I don't know that
the lender has. I can provide you. Offline, I can provide you some information and email you some information on the mandatory purchase.
You better do it offline because this is the only technology that I use right here. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. But I appreciate it.
Right.
And but what you're saying is you're not sure about mortgages. Are you sure about mortgages prior to 94? I need to ask you one more.
No. What they enacted that there was going to be a penalty for the lenders who did not require flood insurance on federally backed loans.
That's fine.
The penalty is, it's about the lender. It didn't say the homeowner is, the lender is required, not the homeowner.
That's right. But that doesn't mean the homeowner is going to be charged, because the lender might have to eat that.
No, they will do, what the lender will do is they will place forced coverage on a homeowner. When they refinance or do a home equity, they always do a floodplain determination.
Yes. We hope so.
They're audited by FDC. I mean, everybody's regulated by someone.
And the mechanism would be the same as any other insurance or paying property taxes.
Right.
Yeah. Anyhow, thank you so much. Only one thing, Ramon, great report for this 100%, but I urge you, when these new maps come out, to try and superimpose areas and what the DCAD value is on residential and businesses, so the future council can see and match this. Look, if we have homes in this area that DCAD value is $14 million, and we might not have the money, or to do all this might cost $80 million, I want the future council to know that there's $14 million worth of DCAD value. We might want to buy those individuals out. What do you think?
I think that's an analysis worth doing, Mr. Rizal.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Mayor, thank you.
Mr. Ashton, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Ramon, I think you said earlier that the pump station ABLE, we are going to take funding, move that back for the other two pump stations, right?
Mm.
Out of three, the pump stations.
We've got funding for three.
Right.
We're going to proceed with two as planned, and we will hopefully award those later this year for construction. The third one, we will design and purchase the right-of-way and delay its construction until the next bond program.
So we're talking about 2010, right?
Whenever the next bond program is.
So if we, do we know what the cost would be and how much we're going to take from ABLE to do the other two designs?
There's more money in ABLE construction than is needed for these contracts. I don't remember the precise amount, but I know that there's more money in ABLE. So,
but when we take that money from ABLE, we got to put that money back in ABLE in the future, but I'm trying to find what is that number.
We still have, I believe, $27.6 million left. About 10 of that would be utilized to design, finalize the design, and purchase the right-of-way for ABLE.
And so we got to put back another $17 million in the future for ABLE.
Yes, sir.
And
we would augment that, obviously, in a future bond program to make up the difference.
So what is the timeline, since we're going to delay ABLE, what is the timeline to finish ABLE pump station?
It would depend on when we have the next bond program, when we float the bonds for that particular project. But conceivably, Mr. Atkins, if you were to have, let's assume for discussion purposes, if you were to have a November 2010 bond election, conceivably you could sell bonds in May of 11 and be ready to go to construction with ABLE at that time.
I guess the next question, let's city manager out here, I hope you can answer. On page 18. You know, I always talk about stormwater fees, and when I see stormwater fees up here, it's at a funding source for these activities, you know, these projects. About stormwater fees, this particular project, and I want to go back to 2008. What was the total amount of stormwater fee that we collected in 2008?
It's in the $30+ million, Mr. Atkins. I don't remember the precise number, but I know it's in that range.
Okay. 30 million.
30 plus.
30 plus.
Yes, sir.
In 2009, what is the forecast?
It's a similar amount. It's a very similar amount.
Okay. These stormwater fees, what a percent of those stormwater fees will be going into this project?
The $7.3 million that I showed you earlier is what you are currently funding in the streets department for these kinds of activities out of that 30-some-odd revenue that's generated by stormwater.
So are we saying about 25% of our stormwater fees is going into this project?
Currently, yes, sir.
So 25% of the stormwater fees. This project, with a stormwater fee, would be reimbursed since we've taken the stormwater fee to go into this particular project and earmarked for this particular project. Is that correct? Yes. 25%.
Of the 30-some-odd million dollars generated by the stormwater fees, 7.3 goes toward levee maintenance.
About 25%.
Yes, sir.
Right. So therefore, if we did not raise our stormwater fees, we would be taking this money from the general fund.
It'll have to come from someplace else, ostensibly. Yes, sir.
Well, I guess my dilemma is, number one, that we look at 2008, and I keep saying stormwater fees, that it looked like the people who have land is paying more money for stormwater fees, and this particular project, it's a citywide project, but we are using the increase of fees for one particular project with 25% of this project. That's my concern, you know. I mean, and number one, we're doing it, but as a council member, but we're talking about 25%. That's a big number.
Mr. Atkins, I don't argue with you that that's a big number. I would, however, point out to you that the Trinity River in the floodway system is the ultimate recipient, the ultimate major drainage system that helps us drain the entire city.
Well, I understand that.
Everything ultimately ends up in the Trinity.
But I do understand that, but ultimately, but when you talk about fees on taxpayers, we raise their fees so high that really the taxes will be lower than the fees.
That's a policy decision, Mr. Atkins.
Mary, question, please.
Okay,
when we decide to raise stormwater fees for our budget, did we knew in advance that these fees that which we had to raise for stormwater fees, 25% of this amount of money was going into this particular project?
We did not know till March of this year that we were going to have this issue, so we did not know that this money was going to be required. And this is not a regional project. Every drop of water that falls from the far outside of the city limits of Dallas ultimately ends up here. So it's sitting in one location, but it serves the entire city.
Well, I understand certain inside the city, but I'm just looking at people who have land that's paying higher fees, and everyone not paying for the same price for a loaf of bread. You know, that's my concern. And that's what I'm talking about. You know, number one is that when we got a dense area, which you do not have in the land, your stormwater fees are lower, but if you got land, you pay more in stormwater fees, and we take that percentage and we put it in this particular project, you know. And it just, you know, I feel like everybody should be paying the same price for local bread.
That's one philosophy as to how to do this. Y'all can have your decisions made as we bring the options forward, but
in my district, you know, we pay high in stormwater fees. And I was trying to find out that recovery is not going back, you know, in this rate. So.
Well, one thing that we are doing is we are going to bring you several options as to how to allocate stormwater fees in part of the budget process.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much. Ms. Hutt, please.
Thank you, Ms. Here on page 18, can you explain to us why the 2,800 trees have to be removed? What's the philosophy behind that?
The tree root system poses the means by which water can penetrate into the subsurface and therefore accelerate impact the impenetrable layer that we want to maintain between the inside and the outside of the levees.
So it's a combination of penetration and seepage.
Yes, ma'am.
Those are the two major.
That's the concern. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. We have discussed that the toll road will have dozens of penetrations in the levees. Is that similarly a concern?
Sure.
And are we still going forward and planning for those penetrations, or are we already planning to potentially move the toll road farther out based on the Corps' concerns with these types of seepage and penetration issues?
All of those penetrations with the parkway, as well as all the existing penetrations, of which there are hundreds, will have to be analyzed as part of the system study and identify solutions for them.
So we don't know at this point what those solutions might cost or what they might be even.
No, we don't.
Okay. And with that in mind, I guess I'm wondering why we would go forward in working on the Margaret Hunthill Bridge with its penetrations if we have no concept of what the solutions to those penetrations
are. That one, the solutions are being designed and implemented as we speak.
At what cost?
I would need assistance. Jill?
TxDOT and the Corps are working on that project, have assured us that project is going forward. They will do some mediation of that project, but they haven't determined what it is right now. And at the time they determine that and the cost, we'll know. It's a TxDOT contract. It will not be City of Dallas cost.
So we're not going to pay any part of the remediation efforts required to address the penetration and seepage issues with the Margaret Hunthill Bridge. We're not going to spend a dime of city money on that.
As I understand it right now, no.
Ms. George, do you have the same understanding?
Well, that is our hope. But we do have a provision in the contract that we have to. There's a contract provision with TxDOT that we might have to pay for certain change order elements, and all of that would have to be negotiated.
And do we have an understanding of what those costs are at this point?
No, because we don't know if anything needs to be done, and then if so, what it would be.
And so I guess that's part of my question, though. Are we going forward on the bridge without knowing what the costs will be associated with any remediation efforts?
Well, I mean, construction is continuing.
Yeah, I guess that's my question, because we're continuing construction, but we don't have our arms around what it's going to cost us.
Well, it would be very...
Let me finish, Ms. Jordan. But we don't have our arms around what the costs will be that are associated with remediating any seepage and penetration issues caused by the bridge.
Well, it would be insignificant compared to the total cost of the bridge. So you would not hold up the whole bridge construction for, you know, putting in a slurry wall or something like that.
When we say insignificant, what's an insignificant number?
Well, a slurry wall might be, you know, a couple $1 million compared to the total bridge cost. So you wouldn't, why would you hold up the whole bridge cost for that?
Additionally, we have talked.
Mary, can I continue on this, and I'll get right back to you, but I want to follow up on that. Do we think that the cap of the cost is going to be $2 million, or do?
We don't even know if we have to do anything there.
Okay, but I guess I'm confused, because on the one hand I'm hearing we don't know if we have to do anything. On the other hand, I'm hearing the cost will not it will be minimal. It sounds to me like we have no idea what the cost will be. I'm just confused.
And that is true. That is true, Ms. Hunt. We have no idea. But let me clarify my point, how I answered earlier. The analysis will confirm whether or not there is an issue. We don't know if there is.
And when will that, tell me when the analysis for that will be completed?
Over the course of the next 6 to 12 months is when we anticipate having those answers.
Okay, so we're not going to have the answers for 6 to 12 months, but we're going, and we don't know what...
As it relates to the parkway, and as it relates to any of the other penetrations that currently exist.
Including the bridge.
No, the bridge is going
forward.
Bridge
doesn't count.
No, the bridge is going on a much faster schedule, looking at its issues.
Okay, and it's my fault. I apologize, Mr. Miguez. I'm not being clear. I'm just focusing on the bridge for this for this minute. I'm just trying to understand when we're going to know how much it's going to cost for us to address the penetrations resulting from the bridge.
But my understanding of that is in the next 6 weeks to so or less.
We'll know what it's going to cost. Okay,
yes.
And we will also know who's going to be paying for it.
Yes.
Okay, and you will update this council the moment you find out this information.
Absolutely.
Okay. That answers that question. Thank you. Is there any issue with the trees with regards to flow impediment? Because I remember at one point we had talked about, and Ms. Sim and I and Ms. Jordan and I had talked about this separately a couple of years ago, about how the trees can be a way to slow water down, that under certain circumstances you want to slow water down. You want to impede the flow rather than having water rushing too quickly. Is there an issue, either positive or negative, with these trees slowing down water?
Trees within a floodway are always a challenge. On the one hand, you want the floodway to be as efficient as it can be, and trees, as you've indicated, can slow the flow down. On the other hand, you want to implement a mitigation plan with any improvement that you do within the floodway. So we're going to have to find, in partnership with the Corps, a fine balance between those two.
And probably 95% or more of the 2,800 trees are not inside the levees. They're on the back side of the levees, so they would have no impact on flow.
What percentage, I'm sorry, Ms. Jordan?
The 2,800 is the count of the trees along the levees. It's not the count of trees down the channel.
Okay.
The 2,800 trees, the vast majority of them, probably 95% or more, are on the land side of the levee, not the river side of the levee.
Okay, so very minimal amount.
Very minimal impact to hydraulics.
Okay, thank you. If we could look at page 25... And Mr. Miguez, I apologize if you've explained this already. You said the major maintenance will require additional resources. We don't have our arms around what that will be. I mean, that's part of our analysis at this point. Is that correct?
We don't know exactly what these will be. If I can flip to page 28, slide 28, and let me give you an example. These are a couple of examples of the kinds of issues that we have to engineer solutions for before we can come back to you and say, here's how we're going to fix it, here's how much it's going to cost. I mentioned the stop log structures, of which we've got about half a dozen, okay? The sill's been removed, so if you put the stop logs, you get water underneath. Well, there may be a better way to do this, okay? So we're going to need assistance, and part of the system study will identify, hopefully, solutions to that. That's one example.
And at what point will we know what the costs will be associated with the major maintenance?
We will know that within this first year.
Within the first year, okay.
Yes, ma'am.
And at this point, we really don't know. I guess if we're going to have to undertake this major maintenance as part of our attempt to address the 100-year flood issues that we have to have finished by early 2011, right?
Yes, ma'am.
We're going to have to figure out a way to pay for this in either this coming budget or the following budget,
yes,
right?
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Because, I mean, putting it in a future bond program, I mean, we could put it in the 2010 bond program, we'd have to sell those bonds immediately, right?
That's correct.
Do we have any projection as to what this will cost? I mean, we don't even have a ballpark figure, so we don't.
No,
this
ma'am.
Could be $100 million. This could be.
I don't think it's in that order of magnitude.
Okay.
But I hate to guess at what it might be, Ms. Hunt. I don't have enough information.
Okay. If we could look at page 29, please. The system study. Now, the system study, I think you break down the components very well and very specifically what comprises the system study. And in total, it's about $29 million, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And we're looking at, and I wasn't quite...
Excuse me, Ms. Hunt, I misspoke. I spoke too quickly. The $29 million buys those elements that we want to move forward with and accelerate and will be incorporated into the system study. The Corps has another set of elements that they will have to pay for, and those are not included in that $29 million.
I appreciate that. So this is part of the city's portion.
What we are advancing and paying for.
I got it. Thank you. Now, the $29 million, I think you explained that part of that will come from the ABLE sump.
It will wholly come from ABLE.
Wholly come. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
I misunderstood a little bit during your conversation with Mr. Atkins. So we're going to take $29 million from the plan for the ABLE sump fixes, and then we're going to request those funds when we go to the voters in the 2010 bond for the ABLE sump.
Construction.
Okay. Looking on page 45, when we're talking about the, can we turn it? Thank you. When we're talking about that last bullet point, the supplemental agreement with the NTTA to address components of the Trinity Parkway, can you elaborate on that just a little bit?
I'm probably going to ask Jill to help me on this one. She's better versed on this than I am. The NTTA supplemental agreement, exactly what does that buy?
The NTTA supplemental agreement is for that limited scope supplement to the supplemental draft EIS, and what that is going to be looking at is related to 4F kind of concerns.
What's that, 4F?
4F is related to historic structures, and it will also incorporate and address the levy issues. FHWA wants to make sure that that environmental impact statement reflects the condition and the issues associated with the levees. So all of this work will be putting those two kind of elements into a small document that will be added onto that supplemental draft.
So when the Corps identified their concerns with the levees, that's when the FHWA determined that we needed this limited scope supplement.
Right, because we completed the supplemental draft EIS prior to the periodic inspection report being done. And so FEMA is asking us to go back, and
FHWA
is asking us to go back and make sure that we understand the ramifications of the periodic inspection report and give the public an opportunity to comment upon that aspect, because it was not in the supplemental draft.
So, Ms. Jordan, will there be an additional public hearing?
Yes, there will.
To address this particular
issue?
Right,
and so part of this work will be, you know, another round of public hearing.
Okay.
Now, I guess the good news is that this time, you know, essentially the whole EIS got kind of republished, if you will, mm-hmm. and we all dealt with, you know, several thousand pages. This will be narrow scope, hence the limited scope, and so we'll just be looking at a smaller page count that will be added to the supplement that we already have.
And do we know when that public hearing will be, the kind of the time frame for that?
Rebecca, hold on just a minute.
Sure.
We anticipate right now it'll be around the summer of 2010.
Okay. If we could look at page 47. Here we're talking about the delay in the toll road construction. And Mr. Viguez, I wanted, and this might be more appropriate to Ms. Jordan, I'm not sure, but I'm trying to, I'm sorry I'm making you walk back and forth. Just stay over here. Just stay over here. This is about toll road construction. I'm trying to get a better handle on the timeline here as it relates to the study, because I've just been a little unsure about when the NTTA, right now the NTTA has finished up their 30% design, right? And they're saying at this point with some of the study of the levees, they're pulling back and they're not going to complete the rest of their design, as I understand it, until when? When are they going to begin the other 70% of their design?
I don't think that we've really nailed that down specifically, but what we're looking at is we had anticipated the construction of the parkway beginning next summer, so the summer of 2010, and now we would anticipate that construction could begin spring of 2012. And so one of the things that we have to work out with the folks over at NTTA is working kind of backwards from that when they would need to begin design. Once we have the levee remediation plan, so that we have our game plan as to what is going to needed to be done, and we should have that along about next spring, then at that time we'll have a much better indication of how easy it's going to be or what the ramifications for design are going to be.
So we're going to have our levee remediation plan about a year from now.
We will have the city's game plan, and so then from there we turn that. We will be able to implement those things that are outside of the Trinity Project. The Corps will be able to take our plan then, and for those items related to the overall Trinity Project, continue then on with the preparation of the environmental impact document.
Would it be fair to say there are stages of the study, so that we'll have one stage completed
right
at that point?
Right, there are intermediate milestones of the study, and so you have different pieces shooting out at different times.
Because it'll still be another 2 years, correct, until the study,
right,
and complete study is completed, right?
Correct.
So we'll have part of it done hopefully next year,
yeah,
around
so we'll
this time.
Our intermediate milestone is to get the game plan together for addressing the levee issues.
How did we come up with spring 2012 as the starting point for the toll road construction?
Essentially, we challenged our federal partners to come up with a schedule that met our existing schedule, and we talked about then all of the steps that needed to be done, and then we realized it couldn't be done within the existing schedule, so we tried to keep it as the minimal amount that it would take.
But we don't quite know yet whether, if we back into spring of 2012, we don't know quite yet if we're going to have all the information needed for the NTTA to begin their 70% design completion.
Well, remember, they NTTA was only planning to take about 7 months to complete the plans from this point. So that's not a very long period. So if you think that we have the game plan for the levee remediation next spring, you add 7 months, in theory, NTTA could be ready to construct just from a standpoint of design by the end of 2010. But they still need to get their environmental impact statement finished, and the Corps still needs to do their environmental reviews and permitting. So you put all of that on there, and so there's extra time. It's not the critical path, is the engineering term, is not the design. We can get that done quicker.
It's all the other issues.
It's all the other issues that are driving the schedule.
Gotcha. It still seems very aggressive to me. I think you
Well, the overall schedule is very aggressive, and we've tried to say that in the briefing, that it's going to require everybody, all of our federal partners,
hitting their marks, doing their reviews, everything that is needed.
And I guess I just look at this project, and I don't know if at any point, just being a realist, I don't know if at any point we've had all cylinders hitting perfectly. And I think that's what this schedule predicts, and I don't know that it's realistic for us to think that if in the past we've never had all cylinders hitting, we're going to suddenly be able to do that. That was just a comment, Mr. Miguez. Let me look at page 51, please. Okay, you answered this question. Lastly, is there a reason that we did not undertake a geotechnical analysis before now? Because it seems to me that a lot of issues are coming to light that indicate that a geotechnical analysis is really critical in going forward, both with the bridge and or with the toll road. Why is it that we kind of waited until we're 30% done with design before we started figuring out we've got some sand issues?
I don't think that's an accurate depiction of what's happened here. As I mentioned before in answering one of the previous questions, there's been a whole lot of geotechnical analysis done with regards to many projects throughout the history of the levees, including, for example, for the parkway. The inspection report has raised questions relative to the levees that heretofore had never been asked. And so until the inspection report, there was no need in anybody's mind to do the type of geotechnical analysis that this study now contemplates.
I guess what I'm just curious about is we kind of discovered recently that there was sand and, you know, in some parts of the levees where that concerns us. And I'm kind of wondering why.
I beg to differ with that, Ms.
Okay.
We've known that there's sand there. I mean, there's sand that was discovered there 50, 60 years ago. There's now a greater level of concern with regards to that sand than there existed 50, 60 years ago.
Okay, so we've known.
The sand has always been there.
So we've known about the sand. It's just that we're more concerned about it.
Yes. Yes. That would be a more accurate depiction of what's happening here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Ramon and Jill, very good presentation. Council members, this is a very difficult thing for us all to stomach, obviously. We're having to do a little bit of backtracking in order to catapult forward. But I do think it's something that we owe to our citizens as a matter of flood control, the first component of the Trinity Project. And so that's why I'm glad we're getting a full council briefing, and I'm glad we're digging into the details. A couple quick questions. Ramon, on page 6, you mentioned in PI 9, the update, that not all the components of the floodway were inspected, but will be in the future. Are we talking about a few that haven't been inspected, or a lot more that are to be inspected? What's the comparison between those that had been versus not?
My understanding is that the periodic inspection looked at all different kinds of elements within the floodway, but it didn't inspect every single one of every kind, if that helps. So even though they looked at every single kind of piece of the floodway, if we had five of these, they may have only looked at two or three of them. So there's another two that haven't been inspected.
So are we talking, we're 80% inspected already with 20% to go? Are we 50-50? Do you see what I'm trying to get at?
I don't know that I can give you a percentage. I would guess, Mr. Newman, that there's probably a significant 30% or so that wasn't looked at.
Okay. I'm not going to hold you to a number. I'm just trying to get a sense of the totality.
For which assumptions were made based on observations of other like components.
Okay. On page 9, it references the city must go, must do certain things in order to get cost sharing under Public Law 8499. Was there not also a waiver process that the city needed to go through in order to make sure that we would qualify, or is this one and the same?
No, we're proceeding with that waiver process so as to extend our coverage as
okay.
well.
So are these one and the same, or is that supplemental to this, or separate from this?
This is one and the same, but
okay.
we're also proceeding with a waiver.
But we are moving forward with the waiver.
Absolutely.
Okay. And is that something we as a city do, or we have to go to the Corps, or we're the applicant?
We're the applicant.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And we're working with the Corps in obtaining it.
Okay, let's go to page 18, please. which talks about the tree removal. And you showed pictures on page, on another page, 15 feet versus 50 feet, correct?
Yes, sir.
But I'll zero in on page 18. There was some discussion about whether the, what's the policy of the Fort Worth District Office versus the division versus national as far as the 15 feet versus 50 feet, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and so where does the Fort Worth District Office policy relate to the national policy?
The Fort Worth District has the within 50 feet requirement. National is 15.
Okay, so the district office, which we work with on a day-to-day basis, week on less, is 15 or 50.
They have a greater, they want a greater distance from the toe of the levee to any tree than the national policy does.
Okay, and is this something we're working through both locally and nationally to
yes,
find
sir.
To find some sort of, okay.
Yes, sir.
Because that would greatly impact the 2,800 trees that are currently being proposed that would have to be removed.
Yes, sir, that is
and
correct.
And it's not like just cutting down the trees, it's removing the stump and then remediating
okay.
the system. I'm elevating that issue to my fellow council members to say that's an area that we collectively as a city can have impact on because of the stricter interpretation versus the national policy. Okay, I'm not picking a fight with you, Kevin. It's very much on the radar. Okay, on page 21, and this is something that I think we've all seen as we may drive over the Trinity or adjacent to it, and that is the debris that seems to, we seem to be the collector of debris. Is there anything the City of Dallas can do? Back up. A lot of the debris that's coming in through the Trinity, on the Trinity, in the Trinity, between the levees that ends up residing here is from upstream, correct?
Yes, sir.
Is there anything that we as a city or that other waterways throughout the country that municipalities can do to say, wait a minute, and I'm not going to pick on a city that's north of us, but a city that's dumping into the Trinity that we then have to clean up their mess?
I guess I would suggest that the key to helping us with debris is really on an individual basis. If we can keep people from simply littering and or when they, for example, do their lawn maintenance, blowing everything onto the street, which is then picked up by the drainage system, ultimately ends up here. So I would suggest that it starts with the individual.
No, I understand for Dallas. I'm talking about debris that's coming from upstream. Is there anything we as a city can do since we're inheriting debris that comes from upstream, or is that just the way it works?
When you're downhill of anybody else, you're going to get it. I don't know that there are structural measures. I'm not aware
because,
of effective structural measures that have been implemented elsewhere.
Because you're right, we're going to get it, and now we're going to have to pay for it.
Yes, sir.
And part of us getting it is us paying for it, and if it's someone else's trash, I always scratch my head and say, that's not being a good neighbor. So what I'm elevating is the issue as to, is there anything we can do to make sure that our neighbors are good neighbors, and we don't have to clean up their trash? Because it looks like from what we're headed, the Corps is saying clean up the levees, and if it's not all our trash, so, and again, I don't know how relevant that is to the total, but it seems like, since we're downstream.
We have two things. Some of these debris and trash pictures are coming down the Trinity,
mm-hmm.
and some of them are our folks coming down the creeks going into the sumps, so we can't say that it's our neighbors, it's all of us. That is why the Council of Governments, who has a comprehensive stormwater program in which the cities of this region are members of it, has a public information campaign to help all of us remember not to litter and not to put things in storm sewers. So there is a regional effort. Could it be enhanced and improved?
There's a regional effort, but there's no remediation back to our neighbors that may be trashing us. Okay. I go to page 32, please. Part of our strategy here, council colleagues, is to, in order for us to beat the clock as it relates to the FEMA remapping, is for the city to create a case, correct me if I'm wrong here, Ramon, is for the city to create a case that proves to FEMA that we can, the levees can protect the city for the 100-year event, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Separate and aside from the Corps' 800-year event.
Yes.
Okay. So, we have a case that to build for this 100-year event, separate from the 8-year event, And then we'll make that case independent to FEMA from the Corps, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And FEMA's determination is separate from the Corps then, because their criteria is the 100-year event.
FEMA will evaluate the levee certification based on the 100-year design.
100-year design. Okay. Are there other cities in the United States that have been successful in approaching this track?
I'm not aware of it.
So we're going to be a pathfinder. I mean, we're going to...
I think we're going to be a pathfinder on many things on this project.
Yes. Okay. But that's our strategy.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And the timetable was 18 to 24 months from April past.
That's what we want to beat.
Okay. All right. And is HNTV going to be the, assuming the council approves, the contractor that we utilize to provide this?
The necessary analysis and solutions, as well as to help us with the actual certification of the levees.
Okay. Let's go to page 41. And this seems to be customary with other things we do with the Trinity Project, and that is half of the cost towards the... half of these costs would be recapture in the Dallas Floodway Project. Half of the $30 million is what we're talking about, or half of the $26 million?
Half of the 25.5.
Okay.
And again, remember the
I'm rounding up in millions.
But if you will allow me, Mr. Newman, the reason for that is that, remember, there are certain things here that are the city's responsibility,
yep,
would be regardless.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't change.
Okay, so that's why it's not the full 29 or 30
years.
So it's half that. Okay. And does that come in the form of credits for future remediation, or is that actually requires an appropriation from Congress?
It'll ultimately require appropriation from Congress.
Okay. And in that case, we have gotten reimbursement.
Yes.
I think Mary said
in previous similar cases.
Okay.
Yes.
So that, we're not being a pathfinder, that's happening. Okay. Talk for a minute to me, and I don't know if this is Jill's or yours, Ramon, about on page 45, the LSSSDEIS. Is that you, Jill? Or okay. Okay. And this goes to a little bit of what Ms. Hunt was asking about as it relates to the Federal Highway Authority as well as the parkway implications. Basically, what's going to go on is that the Federal Highway Authority is going to extend or actually supplement their supplemental environmental impact. Is that the correct way I interpret that? Okay. Does that mean that they're just asking for a more comment time period, or does that mean that they're waiting for additional reports to come from the city?
There will be additional reports and additional sections added,
okay,
to the supplemental draft EIS, and those additional pages.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be probably portions of chapters. The public will have an opportunity to review and make comment upon at a public hearing.
Okay. And that still all leads to a record of decision?
Correct.
Okay. So they're just postponing the record of decision. They're not predisposed for or against. They're just asking for additional information.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Almost done. Ramon, speak to page 47 about schedule assumes design of levee improvements and Trinity Parkway would proceed concurrent to environmental permitting. What is the basis by which the staff is saying that you feel that this can be done concurrently?
I think Jill did a better job of explaining that we anticipate that the system study, and I think Ms. Hunt utilized, I think, the word stages, there are analyses that as they are concluded will allow certain other things to be triggered and move forward. And so we're anticipating, all of us, all of the federal agencies that are partners in this thing, that you will not have to wait until the full system study is complete to allow things to proceed. A classic case in point. The levee certification, we are optimistic that we can get that done early, very early. The parkway, we anticipate that sufficient analysis, thorough analysis will be concluded, solutions identified so as to allow the design of the parkway to proceed at some point before the complete system study is completed.
And I wanted you to say that again, Ramon, because that clearly is the hope. And now that is the hope, that we can do as much concurrently as possible to keep the project moving forward. And yes, there's going to be some delays here, but to keep the project moving forward, albeit keeping the public safety, the levees, and the flood control first and paramount. So I agree with that, and I'm hopeful to work with you and the council to work with the staff and our partners in order to keep that concept right foremost, concurrent. Thank you very much, Ramon. Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate it
very much. Ramon, we appreciate you and all the staff. I know since I received the call back in February, there's been an awful lot of work, an awful lot of time effort to come together, and I also want to thank our partners on it. I know the Army Corps has spent an awful lot of hours, an awful lot of time with you coming together and putting this game plan in place so that we can move forward. So to you, to Mary, to Jill, and to everybody, thank you very much for your time.
I have
something
loud
for myself for you. Make it quick, because we've got to keep going.
Jill, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Very quick question. On the bridge, I concur with this great report. One question. If the columns and the piers and all were put in for the bridge now, my question is, can we proceed on drilling and everything for the foundation for the bridge?
What TxDOT has done is they have stopped working right at the east levee. So all of the other columns and whatever else construction outside of the area right there by the levee is proceeding. It's the work right along the levee that's being held up.
If the bridge steel was ready to be shipped, could we proceed with the bridge?
Yes, we would proceed with erecting the steel.
So if we're clear on that,
right.
If the steel was brought in here.
Right. And that's why TxDOT is in control of the schedule, and they feel comfortable
with
what's going on.
So we could proceed on, is the bridge, is all the steel in Houston ready to be shipped?
No, only the first shipment. There are multiple shipments.
Yeah, okay. Is that going to be delayed? So
from what? Unrelated to this. The steel is unrelated, and it will be
if the columns are finished and put in, and if the steel,
if the steel arrives, they're going to start erecting it.
Fine. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
And in fact, the steel is expected very shortly. Again, Ramon, thank you very much. It's 11:22. What I intend to do now is finish our next briefing with the items attached to that. Then we'll go until we finish that. And then after that, we'll break for lunch and executive session, and then the afternoon speakers will come back after that. So with that, Mary, who do you want me to turn over to on the news desk?
Teresa?
This is a no-brainer.
Thank you. Good morning. This will be a little bit lighter than what we've done earlier this morning. We had in the audience Mr. Dan Blizzard and John Walsh from Dallas-Moore News. They've left, but I think they're on their way back over. And so I'll go through this. This is really kind of an update for the council on a really successful plan that we've had for been working on for the last couple of years. And what we did was last May, the council approved a revision and asked us to come back before we actually implemented the plan and brief the council one more time. So that's really the purpose of the briefing today, is to present the details of the plan, talk to you about an amendment to the authorized terms, and then request approval to go forward. So I'll get started real quick. As I said, back in last May, the council looked at the ordinance again. We looked at fees, had a lot of discussions about that. The council actually approved a design for the news racks and some locational requirements that we worked on with Ms. Hunt. At that time, the city council authorized us to enter into a really great partnership with the Dallas Morning News, and they have been wonderful to work with and made this very easy and done a lot of work, put a lot of effort involved. And then, of course, the council did say, before you put any Newsrex in, please come back to the council. So we're here. So what have we been doing since last May? Well, we issued the RFP. We only received one response. That was the Dallas Morning News, as we anticipated. In October, the council did authorize the manager to execute the contract. So we've been doing that. And then the Dallas Morning News and the staff and property management have done an amazing amount of field work. They have literally walked every single sidewalk in downtown. We have cataloged every single existing news rack, and we have looked for locations for all the new news racks, and that's what's in this news rack plan. We did a very comprehensive book for both Mrs. Medrano and Ms. Hunt, and then the rest of you got kind of a executive summary of this, but when you look in this, you'll see that there's actually a photograph and a map of every single existing and proposed location in the expanded CBD. Now, we did that because we wanted to make sure that the locations were appropriate. We weren't blocking pedestrian paths. We weren't blocking shop owners' windows. We wanted to make extra special sure that we were locating these things in a very sensitive manner for our downtown community. We surveyed over 1,500 racks and over 200 locations, and they've all been mapped and photographed. We took all that information and we circulated all that information to all the departments within the city that review things that happen in the right-of-way, like the Public Works Department and the Planning Department. We put it all together in this great big notebook. The notebook consists of the locational requirements, a communications plan, how we reach out to our business owners and property owners downtown, the design of the news racks, a list of the existing units, and the proposed location, and also the installation schedule. In terms of the locational requirements, we were very sensitive to pedestrian shopkeepers' needs downtown. We wanted to make sure that we weren't impairing the sidewalk width or emergency access, visibility triangles, all those things that we try to pay very close attention to, and that we maintain at least a 50-foot distance in between the racks. In terms of communicating with our stakeholders downtown, we've been meeting with the Downtown Dallas Association, and I believe Ms. Valletta Lill will be joining us in just a moment. Talk to some of our big property owners like AT&T, talk to the art districts folks, people that are going to be very sensitive to the location of these things. And we've cooperated with all those stakeholders in the placement of these racks. The design is something that you've seen before in the Dallas Morning News. Actually installed a really big one out in front of their building so people could see just how big it was. Now, this is actually four kind of, you know, put together. They're not all going to have four. Some will just have one, some will have two, some will have three. And the way we have planned these is we've gone to each existing location, seen how many freestanding racks are out there by themselves, talked to the publisher, said, do you want to be in the new one? And then kind of scaled that accordingly. So like I said, we did have a couple of, you know, staff out in the field with the Dallas Morning News staff walking every single location. They inventoried and surveyed over 1,500 racks and identified all those locations. And then they put them all together in this book. The new proposed locations plan for about 1,100 for both full sheet and half sheet publications. That quad unit has four racks in it. They can be full sheets or half sheets, and we can configure those according to the needs of the publishers. So this would be an example out in front of Neiman Marcus. We knew we'd need one along there somewhere. We didn't want to block those windows, so the new rack would actually be located right where this arrow is. And then we mapped it. We've got it identified on a map, so we know exactly where the windows are, the corners are, who the restaurants are. We've done a very extensive amount of work to make sure that we were locating these in a sensitive manner. This book contains an entire listing of all those locations. And then we also went, for each location, we went to see who was already there. So this will say the green sheet, the observer. We listed everybody that was there. And what we'll do is we'll have, we'll contact them again and say, all right, this is the location at 1602 Main Street. You guys are already in here. How many people want to be in there? And we'll conduct a lottery for those spaces. Because, of course, the top spaces will be kind of the prime real estate, and the lower spaces might not be as favorable. So we'll actually do a lottery so that everybody has an equal chance to win a good location. Dallas Morning News has already acquired the racks, and they're ready to begin installation. How we plan on repaying them for the installation, maintenance, and acquisition is we will collect those license fees, so it's a fully reimbursed program. The license fees that the publishers pay to us for being in the right-of-way, we will reimburse Dallas Morning News over 5 years so that they can amortize their costs. And at the end of that contract, we will own the units, and we can, again, renew that contract if we want to continue that partnership with the Dallas Morning News. New fees will go into effect in August. We've been having regular periodic meetings with the publishers. We were concerned that the publishing industry has started to really take a hit in the last year or so, and we wanted to make sure that everybody was still on board, and we've gotten very good, you know, consistent positive response from them. So we'll know a little bit more about that in August when we actually issue those license, those new fees, and start to conduct the lotteries. But in terms of the contract, which we're asking for some change, authorization to change a little bit by the council today, is that Dallas Morning News, in accordance with the RFP, they purchase, install, operate, and maintain the news racks. City will reimburse them over 5 years, $396,000 to be paid for out of the fees. Term to commence as soon as possible. We've agreed on all the indemnification and insurance requirements. There is a provision for early termination. And as I said, at the end of the contract, the city will own the units. So in terms of next steps, we'll continue to coordinate with the Downtown Association and the large stakeholders. AT&T is very anxious to get one out in front of their building because they're having a big kind of re-grand opening, something like that. They'd like the clutter of the existing racks gone. The Dallas Arts District's, of course, very anxious to have theirs placed out there so that when they have their big openings in October, all of that is cleaned up. We've committed to working with those property owners that have sensitive needs first to make sure we get them taken care of and out of the way. So the schedule is that we would go ahead and execute the contract with the Dallas Morning News in June. We'd have the other agencies take one more look through July, and then we would start in July and installing, Dallas Morning News would, installing the boxes, and hopefully by September and October they will all be in downtown and you'll not see any more clutter on the sidewalks of downtown Dallas. So the action item that's on your agenda today is to amend the terms of the contract to go from 7 years to 5 years, and the cost is just reflective of the true cost of the units. So with that, I'm happy to answer any, here's a map. Doesn't read very well. I think you have that in your packet, the colors, but this is a map of the proposed locations, and again, especially for Ms. Hunt, very detailed information in this notebook.
Before we go to questions, I'm going to ask the City Secretary to read the item into the record. I'll take a motion, a second on that, and then we'll go to comments.
Your item for individual consideration is number 3, a resolution amending resolution number 082901 to modify the authorized terms of a service contract with the Dallas Morning News, Inc. for the purchase, installation, and maintenance of multiple units news racks within the expanded Central Business District.
Moved and seconded. Mr. Rozanski.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, thank you. Very quickly, this started six, seven years ago, Elba, correct? Started a long time ago. Thank you for getting this. One question, page 21, second bullet point.
all I want to know is city will be reimbursed, will reimburse Dallas Morning News from license fees to exceed over 5 years subject, and subject to annual appropriation. So that figures out a little less than $80,000 a year. If we only take in, if we only take in $45,000 a year, they're going to, whatever our, whatever the income is, we don't have to pay the difference. Their return is going to be stretched out, or do we have to kick in? Are we guaranteeing it over 5 years, no matter what we bring in?
Well, that's a really good question. We've been thinking about that to make sure that the demand is there for the number of units that we've purchased. We still believe that the demand is there. We've continued to meet with the publishers. However, one of the things that when we originally proposed the NewsRack, we were looking at a much larger area than just the Central Business District. There are other areas in Ms. Hunt's district, Mr. Natinsky's district, some other areas of town that really wanted NewsRack.
Teresa,
I think we can use those up within 5 years.
I love you, but I just want the bottom line.
Bottom line is we pay for what we collect.
That's the answer. Thank you.
Thank you.
And let me go even further.
We don't need to go any further. You don't need to pay for what we collect. Thank you.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Okay, Ms. Hunt, and then Dr. Estee.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll be brief. I just wanted to say thank you to Teresa and her team and Mr. Gonzalez for working so hard on this. This has been a challenge. We've worked on it very hard the last couple of years. It's been very important to the downtown business owners. If you go to other major cities, Chicago, New York, you see these types of racks. They truly reduce the visual clutter. So great job. Please let your team know how much we appreciate it. We appreciate Dallas Morning News for working so closely with us on this.
Chicago's a great example. That's a good model.
Yeah. And Mayor, just like my colleague Mr. Rosensky just said, this has been a labor of love for many, many years, and it was definitely contentious as well. A lot of the small publications have several concerns that have been addressed. Am I correct, Ms. O'Donnell?
Absolutely, ma'am.
They were part of the process. They were part of the conversations. The lorry, they will be advised in advance where the lorry starts, so everybody has an equal opportunity. Am I correct about that?
Absolutely, ma'am.
Last but not least, the cost. You know, that the city was going to have colleagues in the first preliminary briefings was higher than what the Dallas Morning News presented to us, if I remember correctly.
Absolutely, ma'am.
Okay. The smaller area, I think, is a win-win for our city when we start looking at beautifying downtown Dallas, at beautifying our city. This was one of the first items to jump out. So I want to thank also staff, Mr. Gonzalez, and, of course, my colleagues, Colleen Medrano, Mr. Natinsky, and Ms. Hunt, because I know that they have worked together, Mayor, for many years, and it was every single ordinance that gets changed and gets implemented, it has a process of very hard work. So I want to thank my colleagues for their time and their efforts, and we'll be voting in favor of this, Mayor.
And an add to what you said, Dr. Epstein, and that's thanks to Dallas Morning News. That's the key one. They've taken a leadership position. This we appreciate. And as Ms. Hunt said, it's going to clean up the downtown, and much like you see in Chicago and other cities, it really does make a difference on the streetscape. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed to order? We actually have done well on that one. So what we're going to do now is we'll do the speakers and get the speakers out of the way. Then we'll go to executive session and finish up for the day. Madam Secretary?
Your first speaker is going to be Frank Ward, followed by Ozumba Lung. So I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from the room from further audience before the City Council. Again, your first speaker is Frank Ward, followed by Zumba Lunt. You may proceed. Thank you.
Glory to God. Good morning. In the name of my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, I repent all my sins and all my iniquities. And I just want you all to know that there's a lot of that's going on in the city with all the budget cuts. Some years back, when the city started receiving CDBG funds, several years, they returned millions of dollars back to HUD saying that they didn't have any projects. They were generating a track record to justify spending those funds, so they changed the rules and regulations so that the city could use those funds as they see to do fit. I think this is a good opportunity to use some of the Section 108 money to offset some of the cutbacks that you all having in the problem, so it won't affect the communities. Instead of going ahead with some of the developments that you all are doing, like at Mark and Bird Station, this is really a deja vu for me. About 10 to 15 years ago, when the city borrowed $50 million to do the in-town housing, the minorities were still getting a 10% of that, and that were and then this year when the city decided to do the same thing with the Mark and Bird Center 5 development, the minority is still getting a 10%. I find this to be racist and discrimination that that still, when we use Section 108 money, the large portion of always go to North Dallas, to the white affluent areas, and then it's like the African American or minority areas getting a low part, a small piece of that business. But I think that if we were to postpone some of these developments, because again, you know, with the tollway that was structured, I hear the mayor said that that's going to be postponed, and with the Trinity River project, that's going to be postponed. But somehow, when it comes to development in the white affluent areas, development is still going ahead. We're still going ahead with the project. It just seems that it's affecting Southern Dallas and the minority areas more. And I don't really see a need to cut things in the African American community or in the minority community when we can postpone some of these developments and use some of that Section 108 money, since you all see the government to be able to use it as you see fit. And I know 3 minutes is not long enough for me to really to elaborate on this and really get you an understanding if you all any of that are interested, but I will continue to come back, and I will continue to to inform and to confront what's going on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next speaker is Azumba Lunks, not present. B.M. Randolph, not present. Eddie Props, not present. Irish Watson, not present. Jewel Floyd, not present. Gwen Wooten, not present. That concludes your speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much. Would like to recognize two individuals, touched on one earlier. Valetta Lil. Valetta, thanks for being with us on a number of different counts. We appreciate what you do, especially in the cultural area in downtown Dallas and the Arts District and et cetera, et cetera. We appreciate that. Valetta is a former member of the Dallas City Council, and then a future member of the Dallas City Council is Ann Margolin. Ann, thanks for being with us, too. We look forward to working with you.
And the great news, Ms. Lil, is the news track finally passed. Believe it or not, there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Okay. Let me lay out what we've got now. It's 11:43. On June 3rd, the City Council will now go into a closed session under Section 551.071 of the Open Meetings Act to resolve it, to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters described on today's agenda: Surrey versus the City of Dallas and Allen versus the City of Dallas. What I intend to do now, we've got a press conference that we'll need to do at noon in the flag room. So I'd invite all of my colleagues to join Matt. That will be at noon. Right now, I'm going to ask if you will go ahead and we'll go into executive session if we can clear out real quickly. I'm actually going to hit that one quick case. Let's get that out of the way. Then what we'll do is we'll reconvene in the fifth floor conference room. The council will reconvene in the fifth floor conference room, and we'll go through the remainder of the executive session. I anticipate that will probably last
from 12:30 to 1:30, and then we'll need to come back here simply as a formality to close this session. There's nothing else on the agenda other than just to close this session. So if we could very quickly ask people to leave, and then we'll go through that one case, Tom, and then we'll pick the second one up at 12:30.